to the first Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light podcast. I'm Keir, the community manager from Crystal Dynamics, and with me today I have Forrest Large, or the lovely Forrest Large, to give her a correct title, who's the producer on Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light. So hello, Forrest.
Hello.
And we were going to be joined by Daniel Neuberger, the creative director, but he can't make it because his wife's currently in labour giving birth. So although this podcast is very important, there are some things that are a little bit more important, but hopefully when he's back we'll be able to get him to do some podcasts. What we're going to do, we're going to talk about this podcast, which is called Wait, What? The History and Concept of Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light. So just a general overview of the concept behind the project and how it came about and the processes that went into producing the game. But if we could start with a little bit of history about yourself. How long have you been working at Crystal?
I've been at Crystal for about 3 years now.
Okay, and you worked on Underworld, as some people may remember. What did you work on first?
I was the cinematics producer on Tomb Raider Underworld, and I managed and produced the effects, concept art, UI, and audio team.
Okay, and so now you're the producer. How does that differ, the two roles?
Ah, so before I was producer. I've always been producer at Crystal, but the difference is that with Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light, I was given the opportunity to become game producer. So rather than owning certain areas of a very large game, I got to be the producer for this title.
And so you've been on LCGOL since day one, essentially.
Yes.
And what were your first thoughts when they said, hey, we're going to do a digital download title? Or?
I think I felt like my mind was going to explode. It was really exciting, and it was exciting and daunting.
Right, and I know the mind explosion feeling, because the first time it was presented to me back in the London office, I was, wait, what? and that's why this podcast is called what it is. What's been the most satisfying part of working on the project so far?
I think, you know, when we started the project, the team was tight, and I didn't know that we could actually get tighter and improve in our sort of ability to effectively collaborate with each other. But I think that the thing that I've enjoyed the most is actually seeing the team grow, seeing you know, this team that worked really well together, that like we could actually get better at it. Mm-hmm. as we went through the process. And, you know, it was a lot of firsts for a lot of us. And just the fact that it's co-op in a Lara Croft game was definitely a big first for all of us. So I think, you know, the process has been amazing. And then just the fact that we have actually been able to pull it off.
Right. And produce a game that is now at 4 nominations for Best of Show at E3. It's getting really great write-ups from people that have got their hands on the game. So that must be lovely for you to see each time something pops up and there's someone saying it's a really cool game. How does it feel after you've put so much work and hours into the game?
Well, it just makes me so proud of the team, because I know the amount of work that the team has put into this. They have put their heart and soul into this title. Mm-hmm. And they deserve every accolade. We deserve every accolade we get.
So the end party will be good.
I hope so. It's just that we've worked so hard, and we really try to make a pure game and mm-hmm. a pure game experience.
Cool. And so I mentioned E3. You were busy at E3, it's fair to say.
I was busy. I met with, or I did over 70 interviews in 3 days.
Wow. Because it was my first time at E3, and it was just so hectic showing the game to people. I mean, it's brilliant because you get to meet loads of different people and see their reactions when they start playing the game, and it was like unanimously positive. I didn't have anyone that didn't enjoy it. But how was it giving like 70 interviews in the space of like 2 or 3 days?
You know, before E3, I actually thought that the PR part of my job was the easy part. You know, game development is hard. Mm-hmm. Interviews, easy. And I had to really reevaluate that after E3 because not only was it 70 interviews in 3 days, but it was on the show floor, so I was shouting the whole time. And here we hung out, and so you heard me. I was losing my voice and kind of...
Well, we had the massive screen. Square Enix had a huge screen and with a really loud soundtrack showcasing all the Square Enix games. So it's kind of like competing with that. And the Space Invaders game had a like techno soundtrack or something, so you had to really shout to get heard over that, I remember. But it was cool. Like, it was a lot of fun.
It was tremendous fun. I loved every second of it.
And so we've got some questions from the forums. We've got loads of questions from the forums. The first one is from Danielson from the Eidos Forum, and he wants to know who made the initial decision to make two teams, one working on games like Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light, and one working on the Pillar release, and how were the people selected?
So much of the team, actually, yeah, basically the team is all individuals who worked on Tomb Raider Underworld. There was a team that continued on with DLC on Tomb Raider Underworld. And after that, we said, you know what, this team works really well together. We want to do something exciting with this team. So the team is comprised of a lot of senior individuals. So we have a handful of the really seasoned leads from Tomb Raider Underworld. For example, Patrick Cirque, who is a major industry veteran. I think he's been in the industry for like 17 or 20 years or something like that.
Wow.
He's our environment art director. And then we have Rob Pavey, who has, gosh, been in the industry for decades. So we have some real heavy hitters, some real experience. But then also we wanted to make sure that we developed this team where we allowed more junior talent to develop. And it's harder to develop talent on a bigger team, I think, because... you know, that's it's a variety of reasons of why it's challenging, but it's a lot easier to shine when you're on a smaller team than when you're on a bigger team.
Mm-hmm.
So the goals of the project were innovate, take risks, check out being, you know, this team size and see how that is. And I guess in terms of the selection process, it was partly, you know, people working behind the scenes and thinking about the individual skill sets within the studio and who works really great together. And also, it just kind of naturally happened out of Underworld, where we were a group of individuals who really respected each other and really enjoyed working together. So it seemed like a natural progression to continue on as a team.
Aussie500 from TombRaiderForums.com asked, was it just the GOL team that had a chance to put forward ideas for the new game, or was everyone at Crystal Dynamics able to come up with something? And how long did everyone have to come up with their ideas? Were they in teams, or could individuals put something forward? And who actually decided that Guardian of Light was the best idea?
Ah. So we really stress team ownership and individual contributions to this project. So it was, it was very fast in terms of how quickly the ideas came together. But it was about speed. We broke up into small teams. We prototyped different ideas and concepts. I think we gave everyone a week, and then we came back together at the end of the week to pitch. And from that, we wanted to really lock down camera. We were looking at doing a 2D side scroller in co-op, or we were looking at doing an isometric.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, we didn't think, or the majority of people did not think that we would go with isometric, but we had given everyone another week, and we playtested isometric and the side scroller with everyone in the studio, and the team decided, and it was far and away the most fun, and mm-hmm. it seemed like it had the most potential, and it was really just the most exciting. So who decided? The team decided.
Okay, and so that's a theme that runs through the development of the game.
Mm.
And the next question is from Nightwish from TombRaiderForums.com, but she recorded the question, which I think is awesome. And so, here it is.
Why did you pick Central America again? Were there other locations that you considered?
And hear it is again, because I think she's got the cutest voice ever, so we're going to hear it twice.
Why did you pick Central America again? Were there other locations that you considered?
There were actually other locations that we considered. I mentioned New Orleans. We knocked about a bunch of different locations. And actually, for the first 2 weeks of the project, we were in a different location. And I'm not going to say where it was, because that's our team secret. But we were somewhere, and it wasn't Central America. So
you realize people aren't going to stop asking you where that was. But that's fine.
Well, maybe they can guess, and maybe the winner gets a prize.
Maybe.
Like that. But so basically what happened was we knew that we had a very short production cycle, and we also know that one of the areas in which we've delivered as a studio and as a team is in amazing-looking environments. So we just realized 2 weeks into the project that although our new location idea was really cool and we were actually very much attached to it, we didn't feel like we would be able to deliver the quality that, you know, we're committed to in the time frame. So we pulled back and we looked at where we felt like we could locate our story and deliver on quality, and we decided on Central America. Part of that is because we had a suite of textures that we had before. So there is a little bit, like the plants might be familiar to some of the players, for example. So we did borrow from past games a few of the assets, but for the most part, it was taking what we had and modifying it.
Okay. And the next question is from Dark Seven Angel from the Eidos forums. Who wants to know if the idea of the a co-op game was something you had from the start, or did it come halfway through? Or
it actually, I don't know. I know that it was a very high-level goal that was presented to the team from Daryl. And, you know, when we were in production on Tomb Raider Underworld, we had the doppelganger and we had Lara. And so I do remember discussions where we thought, you know, how interesting this idea of and in cutscenes, you know, you have Lara confronting the doppelganger in a very interesting way. So, and Lara has always had very interesting relationships with all the people in her life. So, we just thought, you know,
take
how
it another
interesting.
Step,
yeah.
Another step forward.
How interesting.
Okay. And Sylvia Raider, I hope I pronounced that correctly, from TombRaiderForums.com, has recorded a question, which is awesome. So here we go.
What stories were considered for the game apart from the Mirrors of Smoke?
So honestly, it really was the Mirror of Smoke story. We did not have time to knock around a bunch of different storylines. Mm-hmm. Story takes a long time to produce for a game, and it was basically, okay, this idea of the Mirror of Smoke artifact is very interesting to us. Let's build the story around it.
So it really works. And did you modify it slightly as you went along, or was it kind of like Dan just said, here's the idea, and then you kind of built from that?
We really based the story around Dan's idea of this Mirror of Smoke. And from there, we had various iterations on the script. Mm-hmm. But there really was no other story than the Mirror of Smoke.
Cool. And so Zebra from Tomb Raider Forums asks, what was the original initial thought behind releasing downloadable spin-off titles in between the pillar releases? Was it that you wanted to have more time to develop the pillar releases and needed something to keep the fans busy in the meantime? Or was it that you wanted to try out new stuff that with Lara Croft that would have been too risky to do in an actual Tomb Raider game?
So we are really excited about the digital space, and we think, as a studio, that this is a very important space that is growing. And so, yes, we wanted to take risks in the digital space. Mm-hmm. And frankly, part of it is that when you have a smaller team, you can take bigger risks. For example, we have the zombie fish, Chompy.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know if we ever would have done that.
And Chompy's a legend.
In a Tomb Raider game.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to say that in the games industry now, development of AAA titles, whatever it may be, it's becoming such a complex process. It does take longer, so it's nice for Crystal to be able to give something to the fans while they're kind of waiting. Is that fair, Colin?
I would definitely agree with that. And honestly, I follow the forums very closely, and I know that the other dev team members do as well. And there does seem to be sort of an underlying beat here and there where I'm hearing that the fans are interested in something new.
Mm.
So, you know, I know, I can't speak for Daniel, but I know that this is something that is very near and dear to his heart, that as a Tomb Raider fan himself, it was very important to him that we'd offer something slightly different.
Cool. And that kind of connects on to LaraFan25's question, which is, out of all the crazy ideas for the future of the Tomb Raider series, how does Guardian of Light compare to the rest of the ideas? Is it closer related to the core of Tomb Raider, or is it one of the ideas that was out there and vastly different?
Well, without really giving insight into just how crazy the ideas have been, we have had some really, really crazy ideas.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being crazy, how crazy? 11.
10, or okay. 11, or 12.
Right.
Really crazy. So, you know, it's... when you have a character like Lara Croft, you can't just go to crazy town.
Sure.
And, you know, there are so many people who love Lara, and so you have to be very thoughtful. You can't just say, Lara's gonna go in a spaceship to the moon. So... not to say that was one of our crazy ideas, but...
So it was a balance between finding something new and different, and then, but also keeping it so it fits Lara, fits into the world,
exactly.
And it is appropriate for her.
Exactly.
Cool. So My Raider for Life asks, was this a hard game to deliver to the fans, and do you think you've ticked every box for what we, the fans, want in the game?
Well... that is a good question. I really hope that we have, as a team, what we care about in a Lara Croft experience is exploration, puzzles, platforming, and some amount of combat. So what we've done in this title is we really feel like we have preserved exploration. Puzzles are a big thread throughout the game. They're bite-sized. They're not quite to the same scale that they have been in past games. We do have platforming, and we have actually, we feel like, done some exciting things with combat. I'm interested to see what the fans have to say about story.
Mm-hmm.
Because the story is very light in this game, and story has been a big thread in the past about what the fans care about, what the fans are critical of, what the fans are excited about. So we do have story in this game, but it is story-light compared to the other games.
Okay, and from where I'm sitting, it's kind of like you've drawn some new boxes and ticked those as well. So it's not just like the boxes that to be ticked that you'd expect from a typical
yeah.
Tomb Raider. There's some new elements in there, like the puzzles. For me, that there's a new dimension because it's the co-op aspect, which is a lot of fun. And as a community manager, I think that's awesome because it means a lot of the fans are going to get to talk to each other for the first time, which is something, you know, that they've never had to do before. So there's some new stuff in there as well, I think, that you've achieved that people don't necessarily realise they want yet, but I think when people get their hands on the game, like Melanie Tomb Raider did, then they realise that it's a lot of fun and that there's a lot of new boxes that have been ticked.
Yeah.
So well done on that.
Oh, thanks.
The next question's from TR Anniversary 119, and the question is, Lara has never had a partner before in-game. When you were coming up with the concept, did it cross your mind how fans might react to such a change in the series? And you guys were scared, right, with a sticky-out-tongue emote.
There definitely, you know, was a question of what would the fans think of this.
I was scared.
Yeah, it's really different because for some people, you know, Lara Croft is a very solitary experience, and it's about exploration, and it's about a journey, right? And what really was heartening to me is that the fan community is from where I sit and my observations of following the community in my 3 years at Crystal is that it is a community that has a lot of communication and a lot of interaction among community members. So if there's so much discussion about different areas of the game, well, wouldn't it be interesting for these community members to play with each other? So I think, you know, it was a little scary thinking about introducing a new character, but we also made sure to be really true to the single-player experience as well, mm-hmm. so that if there are players out there who are not interested at all in playing with another game, we have delivered a single-player experience. But I think that, you know, I mean, for example, there's a thread about let's play together. I think there are two threads about let's join each other. So I am excited to see, you know, what, yeah.
And
what happens.
And you touched on the single-player experience. It's almost like there's two games because the puzzles have been changed slightly and Lara has the spear and stuff. So the puzzles are a bit different in one-player mode. So it's like it's worth playing through in co-op and in single-player.
Exactly. The players progress through the same levels, but the puzzles, like Kier mentioned, entirely different. And also, the combat feels different, and the platforming feels entirely different.
Cool. And the next question's from Mudkip25, and it's Chompy. Where did the idea of Chompy come from?
So, Chompy. Chompy! So, the idea of Chompy, I'm going to go ahead and give the long-winded answer. Chompy started out as a medium-sized level. Chompy started out actually without even Chompy.
Nice.
The idea of Chompy was the idea of fighting upriver, where so the designers had an idea of an exterior space where, so we had done the courtyard in the first part of our development, and there was something that was really appealing about the river. And as well, there's water in the first T-Rex boss fight. And there's just something that's so appealing about being in the water. I don't know if it's like a womb thing. I don't know. Personally, I love being in the water. I love fighting in the water. I love running around in the water. I think it looks amazing, and it feels great. So we had this idea that we wanted to, rather than just having water be a part of a level where mm-hmm. you just kind of cross it to get to the other side, you actually play along or, you know, up a river. So the idea started that it would be an exterior level. You would play up a river, move up a river. And then the idea, you know, like game dev, changed over time. People input. We looked at the levels that was before and after, and I think I cried because I was very attached to the idea of going up a river. But we decided that what we wanted to do was the previous level, which we actually call Lake Tomb. That's our dev team name for it. Mm-hmm. Probably shouldn't say this, but
no, that's cool.
Our dev team name for the level before Chompy is Lake Tomb. And we felt like that space was so interesting that we were interested in bringing the experience of pushing the players up screen to be at the end of that level. So I hope I'm not giving anything away, but anyway, it did become its own level after a while, but it feels like an extension of that level. And we decided to remove the river, even though I was a big proponent of it and cried. But we removed the river. We brought the level inside. And the big challenge was that we really wanted this level to be so exciting, and we wanted to really motivate the players upscreen, and we wanted it to be fast-paced because we felt like at that part in the game, we really wanted to ramp action, and we really wanted the players to feel pressured.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, the co-op players should have established a good relationship. So that's really where we test, you know, like, there's giant monster, and you have to trust each other, and you have to catch each other and time your jumps right. So anyway, The design challenge was, how do we motivate the players to move up screen, and how do we create this intense pressure? So one of our designers just threw it out there. What about a big zombie fish?
Which...
It actually might have been our character. I'm not sure. You should ask Cam, actually.
Yeah,
it's a good question for Cam. Maybe, I mean, we probably all have slightly different memories of it. But someone said, how about a big giant zombie fish? Oh my God, that's a great idea. Yes. Because we wanted some kind of enemy or some kind of force to basically fill the bottom of screen and push the players up.
Mm-hmm. And he's so gross and scary that you want to run away when he's pursuing you.
I mean, he's like the best enemy ever. So yeah, so that was the thing. We wanted to push players up screen. The whatever it was that pushed players up screen had to fill from the mm-hmm. two sides of the screen. And we ended up with Chompy, and he's so gross and slobbery, and he's like a piranha and. Yeah,
I've got some of Cam's, who's the senior artist on Guardian of Light. I've got some of his sketches initially that were of Chompy, and then I've got a render as well to give out to the community soon. So that's cool. But I love Chompy; he's a legend.
He is a legend, and maybe we'll be able to do that exterior river
another time. Fingers crossed. And the next question is from AJ Rich 17901, and he has also recorded a question, which is cool. So over to you, AJ Rich.
In terms of putting the game together, was it more fun working on the spin-off rather than a normal Tomb Raider game?
The difference between the Tomb Raider Underworld team and what we call the digital team, the Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light team, is mainly game size, or team size, rather. So on the Underworld team, it was much more hierarchical. There was no way that we could get everyone in a room and actually take turns talking and listening to each other, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So Underworld was really fun just because the scale was so big and so challenging. And so, you know, a lot of my days on Underworld was just running around and chasing people down and mm-hmm. and sort of doing the like run from death to death thing, which is fun. On digital, because we are a smaller team, we're actually able to do a morning meeting where we actually stand in a circle and we take turns talking and listening to each other and giving feedback. So just in terms of cross-disciplinary feedback, I think that we really benefited from the team size and then also ensuring team ownership. We were really able to do that with this project.
Cool. Rumbelina UK from the Eidos forums says, we've all seen how awesome LCGOL can be. Nothing can stop us from buying it, which is brilliant. And how many hours of playtime should fans expect from the Gun Toter's latest downloadable adventure?
Ah, good question. I believe that it is 8 hours minimum per, so 8 hours for single player mm-hmm. and at least 8 hours for co-op. If you are like me and you want to run around and check out plants, if you want to collect everything, or if you're just, you know...
You're a gem addict, is
poking.
What you're trying to say.
I am a gem addict! But I also am just kind of slow in general and just like to kind of poke around and look around corners.
There's a lot of stuff to collect.
The
skulls and everything, so it's...
20 hours? I don't know. I mean, it really depends on the kind of player that you want to be, but if you're the kind of player that's just, I'm just going to run to the end
mm-hmm.
and not explore at all, then probably 6 to 8 hours.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah, I would say 8+ hours.
Cool. Chris99 from the Eidos Forum is awesome because he's also recorded a question, which we like. Take it away, Chris.
Is whether Totek is able to speak English. So thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to the game.
I look forward to you playing the game. We did actually chew on that for a while. Should Totek, an ancient Aztec warrior, be able to speak English? That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I think if I'm right, Totek would have spoken Nahuatl, which is a language that very few people in the world are able to speak. it would have been very challenging to get the script translated and ensure that we actually, you know, understood the dialogue that was being recorded. So we decided that it would be like video game magic and Totec just speaks English, or maybe Totec is speaking Nahuat and we are hearing Totec through Lara's ears and Lara understands Nahuat.
That's a good answer. AJ Rich has recorded another question for us. So here we go.
Once the trailer was finally revealed and we got to see the new Lara model, she resembled her classic self, for example, the longer ponytail, the classic colors. Was this intentional as a nod towards the classics?
Yes.
Cool.
We're all fans. We love every incarnation of Lara, especially her original one.
That's a good answer. Another question comes from Jesse from TombRaiderForums.com, and they want to know if cross-platform will be available. So if someone has a PC, can they play on the PS3, for example?
I wish. I would love it. Unfortunately, it was something that we could not tackle for this project. So No cross-platform. I'm sorry.
Never mind. we've got a question from Kiko from TombRaiderForums.com. Hello, Kiko. And he is sure there's going to be a feature that makes us able to put the camera behind Lara. Is that right?
Yes. The age-old question. This is actually a question that we were asked a lot when we were playtesting this game. So the ISO camera is definitely new to Lara Croft. And I can understand that it would be challenging. But honestly, we love the ISO camera for this game so much that we decided that we would not have that kind of feature for the camera. We did actually playtest some level of player control over the camera, and what we decided was that in co-op mode, the players can control the distance of the camera by running far apart and staying close together. But honestly, we decided to honor the new isometric camera for this game and not allow players to put the camera behind Lara. Also, we built the environments for the camera, for this camera perspective. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how much pride we take in our environments, I think. We just design-wise, art-wise.
So it made sense to commit to the isometric camera.
Yeah, and it's a really fun camera. We had a great time playing it.
And also you get to see Lara in the cutscenes.
Yes, thank you. That is the other piece, is that so we did get feedback that, gosh, the camera is really far away and we love seeing Lara, and especially, you know, I think this Lara model looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. So what we did was we made sure that in the in-game cutscenes that we got really close to Lara. So actually we get close to Lara from behind in the cutscenes and from the front and from the side in the cutscenes. So Through the cutscenes you can really get closer to Lara.
And here's a question from Keir from Crystal Dynamics, because you've mentioned the playtesting quite a lot. And so I've only been here a couple of months. But from what I've heard, it sounds like there was a lot of playtesting that went on the fly, and that was like a key part of the project for you guys.
Yes. So there were actually a lot of different levels of playtesting. The first level of playtesting was in-game, was in-team playtesting. So every morning we had a playtest topic. It might be a designer sending out an email to the whole team saying, hey, check out this new platforming setup in this specific area, play it in single player and co-op and give me feedback.
So that's as a designer's kind of making it, he's getting feedback and then changing stuff a little bit to make it more fun. And
exactly. It could be the animators saying, you know, check out this new cutscene or check out this new moveset. It could be the programmers saying, hey, I've implemented this feature and what do you think, and what needs improvement. So I mentioned that we would actually stand up every morning, and that's what we would talk about. We would stand in a big circle, mm-hmm. and after we had played the topic, we would actually give feedback to whoever it was that was looking for feedback. And then as well, it was an opportunity if someone was just really concerned about something, they could also bring it up. Or if they were stuck on something or blocked by a different department, they could. So that was one level of feedback. And then as well, you know, everyone on the team, because we were so close-knit and just a smaller team, people were grabbing each other constantly. Hey, come look at my stuff. Hey, come do this. What we also did, as I mentioned earlier, we play-tested with the rest of the studio, so the other developers. We also grabbed, like, finance people and mm-hmm. people from IT. We grabbed our receptionist on more than one occasion. And then after that, when we were happy with what we had created, and even when we knew there was more work, we brought in people from outside. Mm-hmm. So lots of layers of playtesting. In the beginning, we did actually leverage some family and friends, but we decided, you know, for playtesting purposes, it's actually best to use people who are not friends or connected to people on the sure. team, because they're not they're going to be nice, you know, like if you bring your mom in to say, hey, look at what I did, she's not going to say, hey, that's not good at all. Yeah. She's going to be like, good job.
Well, that's cool. And I've been here a couple of months, but I've been pulled over to playtest certain bits, and it's awesome to see the guys like changing stuff, and then we do something that they weren't expecting, and they kind of really build it and just ensure that it's fun. I think it seems like a great way that, well, it's great that you guys can do that so yeah. easily.
And particular, actually, it has been really helpful for combat areas in terms of gauging difficulty and gauging fun. Mm-hmm. And for puzzles as well. Actually, this happened earlier today, or was it yesterday, Kier?
It was yesterday, yeah.
Okay, yesterday. So Kier and I were playtesting one of the designer's setups, and we came up with a solve that he didn't even realize was a solve. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just the designers love being able to see how basically other people's brains work and what they're thinking about. And then that same... And then from yesterday, he tweaked what he was designing, and then I play-tested it again with someone else, mm-hmm. and it was different.
Awesome. And we're coming up to the last few questions. NRO from TombRaiderForums.com asks, will this game make references to previous games?
This game makes no references to previous games. It entirely stands alone in its own world. We are extremely vague about the timeline on mm-hmm. purpose, because we feel that this is a really just different experience.
And so God Horace from TombRaiderForums.com asked a similar question, but it's very much like Lara's been on loads of different adventures in her time, and so this is one of them that's stored in her journal, and it's kind of, it's in the universe, but it's not connected.
Exactly. It could be... Lara could be a university student. She could be, you know, later, past university. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the idea is that this is one of her many adventures.
Cool. And Poke Warrior from TombRaiderForums.com asks, will we be expecting to see a sequel to Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light? We'll ask that one first.
I hope so. It really depends on how this game does in terms of... fan and community reception, public reception.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a no.
It's no. We're really open to it, and we would very much love to be able to, you know, do it again, because we had so much fun. But we really need to see, you know, what happens with this one and what the feedback is, and we really need to be able to respond to that.
Okay. So. And the second part of the question from Poke Warrior and Matt TR, hello Matt TR, asks if there'll be any add-ons or DLC.
We are very much open to it, and we'll see what the public is pushing for.
So maybe not. We're not saying anything.
Exactly. We're not saying anything.
Cool. Well, Forrest, that's all the questions we have. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Keir.
And there'll be another podcast coming up soon. I'll start another thread in the forums to invite more questions. But thanks very much for listening. And until next time, see you later.
Thank you so much.